Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast that is exclusively available to you as a Circle member. These episodes are a deeper dive down the holistic trauma healing rabbit hole. You will find yourself challenged, empowered, inspired, and maybe even a little bit uncomfortable. But remember, we're getting to the root of how trauma has affected every aspect of your existence, and that's not always quick or easy. By being part of the Trauma Healer Circle, you are already consciously creating your best possible reality and weaving a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. I'm so honored you're in my circle.
Hey, Trauma Healer Circle. We're going to do the first ever bonus Q&A episode. I often get questions from you guys in the DMs on Instagram, and also from people who aren't in the circle. I get questions all the time in the DMs, and I thought I would take some of those DMs and answer them here on the bonus episode. So this is your first bonus episode for the month of December. I know it's like December 17th, and I'm still just giving you your first one. It's a busy month, okay? I think we can all agree December is a busy month, and if we could just close our eyes for the month of December and then wake up and it be January 2nd. How great would that be? This is me living in avoidance. Yes, I'm doing it consciously. Okay, give me a break. Just kidding. All right, so I'm just going to dive in with these questions. I don't know how many questions I'm going to get to. I'm just going to, I guess, watch the timer on the podcast recording. And if we get to 2 hours, I think we'll know we've gone too far. So just one at a time, right? We can only do things one at a time. All right. So the first question is, I'm feeling conflicted. Some of the triggers I've been having are mostly around my family. I've made the choice to set boundaries, so I've left some family chats and don't attend many family gatherings anymore. My conflict is, am I making the best healing decision with these big boundaries, or am I running away, avoiding triggers, and missing an opportunity to heal? This question comes from Annie, who is not in the circle, just from Instagram. So this is a really, really good question. And if you haven't listened to the trigger episode on the main podcast, it's episode 59. That one's all about triggers. I think I got more positive feedback on that one podcast episode than any other podcast episode I've ever put out. So definitely go check out episode 59 if you haven't listened to it already. But in terms of feeling triggered around family and setting those big boundaries with family, is that running away or are you missing an opportunity to heal? So I say this in episode 59, but I want to reiterate it here. There is a difference in living in avoidance and setting healthy boundaries. Like, the trauma brain tends to jump to the most extreme perspective, right? Like, you guys know that the traumatized nervous system is a binary nervous system. So everything to a traumatized nervous system is life and death, even if it's not actually life and death. You're perceiving it that way. So that's what the trigger is. So if you actually have been in a bad situation with someone, let's say, because this is an extreme perspective and this is what the trauma brain goes to, but let's say that you experienced a sexual assault and now you're working through healing the trauma from that sexual assault. And you realize that when you're watching a movie or when you're being intimate with a partner or something like that, that those feelings get brought up and you're behaving as if that sexual assault is happening in the moment, even if it's not. So you can be totally safe, but you feel unsafe. So that's the trigger, right? But is it avoidance because you don't want to sit down and have coffee with the person who sexually assaulted you? No, you are not required to give the people who've harmed you access to you. So if you have a family who's toxic, who doesn't respect your boundaries, goodness knows, David and I certainly have experience with this. There comes a point when you're just like, you know what? The problem isn't me anymore. Like, I'm identifying codependency, lack of boundaries, this dysfunctional family pattern, trauma bonds in my family, inappropriate conversation, you know, religious conversation, coercion, whatever it is. If you identify that and you're like the only person in your family who's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is not okay. Like, my family is whack. Then is setting boundaries going to be necessary? Yes, absolutely. Does that mean you're avoiding healing because you're setting those boundaries with your family? No. And I would actually argue that that is a sign of healing. Like, it is a sign of not being healed to see dysfunction and try to exist in the middle of it. And that often leads to fawning, of course. You see the dysfunction and you don't want to have conflict about the dysfunction, so you change and modify yourself to fit in. So I actually think it's a sign of healing that you can see the dysfunction and that you're like, okay, I need to set some boundaries here. Like, I'm going to leave these family texts. Oh my gosh, don't even get me started on family texts. I hate family texts. Like, I need to leave this family text. I don't actually want to show up for the holidays. I don't actually want to go to this family reunion. Like, is that a healing decision? Sure. If you can make that choice from a grounded and sovereign place, and there is a different energy in avoidance than there is in boundaries. And I think sometimes if your nervous system has a lot of dysregulation, if you happen to be a fawn type, then setting boundaries can feel like a threat. And it can often feel like it would just be easier to not set the boundaries. Like, it would just be easier to avoid the conflict, to keep going to the family gatherings, to keep being in the group text, to keep going to the family reunions, to keep existing in the middle of that dysfunction, right? Like, it might seem to a fawn type easier to do that than to go through the discomfort of setting a boundary, because your boundaries are going to disappoint people. Your boundaries are going to, you know, people are going to not be happy about them. They're going to feel like they're not a priority. They're going to feel like they're not considered. They're going to feel like you don't care. They're going to feel like you're going against tradition or whatever they're feeling, right? But there's a different energy in avoidance and setting a boundary. And I think each person has to decide and feel into your body as to what that difference is. You know, if there's an avoidance energy, you're not going to feel solid in that. I think you're going to be questioning yourself a lot. And that's not to say that you won't question yourself a lot if you set boundaries, especially if setting boundaries is new to you. But I think you can know, this is absolutely the right thing for me. I need to set this boundary. I am trying to exist and change myself to fit in with this dysfunction of my family, and it's clearly no longer working because the dysfunction still exists, and when I'm with them, I feel dysfunctional, whereas if I set this boundary, I can still love my family. I can still come to some things sometimes, but I need to set this boundary because I don't actually like who I become when I'm around my family, or I don't like how I feel when I'm around my family, you know? So I think having that grounded, authentic, sovereign knowing of is this avoidance? Is it a boundary? I mean, every person has to ask themselves that question, I think, and only you can answer it. Like, what's the energy behind it? If the energy behind it is fear, I would say it's avoidance. If the energy behind it is feeling grounded, I would say it's a good boundary and you should probably stick to it. If the energy behind it is urgency, I would say that might be avoidance, you know, but only you can tell. So no, it is not living in avoidance to set boundaries. There is a difference between living in avoidance of triggers or dysfunctional people and having healthy boundaries. And healthy boundaries are necessary. Avoidance is not necessary. And I think, you know, we could get all into semantics here and say that healthy boundaries is a form of avoidance, but it's a conscious form of avoidance. You know, it's not a reactive avoidance, it's a responsive avoidance. So I think there's a difference there. And I think it's up to each individual and each individual situation
to determine, am I living in avoidance? Is this boundary necessary? Because at the end of the day, you are not required to give anyone access to you, including your family, including your friends, including your church, including whoever. You're not required to give anyone access to you. So is that avoidance? Maybe, but can you make that decision from a grounded place? Can it be responsive avoidance, i.e. a boundary, and not reactive avoidance? I think that's the difference. So that's a really great question, and I'm happy to have answered it, hopefully. All right, the next question that I have here is, I would like to heal my mother wound and move forward in a healthy and grounded manner. How can I do that? All right, so I think first we have to define what the mother wound is, if that's something that you've never heard of. So the mother wound obviously has to do with your mother, and it looks like your mother having just a general emotional absence. Like maybe emotionally, your mom was just like not there. Maybe she was checked out. Another thing that the mother wound looks like is your mother just wasn't attuned to you. So maybe she didn't soothe you when you were upset or hurt. Maybe she didn't notice when you were hungry. Maybe she didn't co-regulate with you. And I mean, obviously you survived up to this point. So maybe she met that need some of the time, but maybe not all of the time. If your mom said things like, not now, I'm busy, or if there was like some passive aggressiveness, like, oh, you just want me when you need something, you don't really love me. You know, that kind of vibe, even your mother, like trying to silence your own emotional expression, like don't cry, or that's not something you need to cry about. And even down to like really yucky criticism and verbal abuse, like how could you be so stupid? How could you be so clumsy? And very often our mothers behave this way, like they mother this way because they didn't have adequate mothering themselves. So the way you can know if you have a mother wound is it affects your individuation from your mother, and you're like unable to see clearly who you are. And even if you're like, but my relationship with my mom is fine, like I had a pretty good mom. If you have trouble individuating and not being able to know who you are, even if you don't consciously connect it to your mother, it's likely linked to your mother. If you often currently or in the past seek your mother's approval or validation or attention, that's a sign of the mother wound. The mother wound affects how you perceive the world. So you are going to perceive the world as a more dangerous place if your mother was less attuned to your needs, both emotionally and physically. If you have a mother wound, you may have very loose or very firm boundaries. So you're existing in the binary of hell yes and hell no, which sometimes is necessary, but often if we can't move past that hell yes, hell no, to me, that's kind of a sign that you're not maturing in your boundaries. So that may be a sign of the mother wound. And then also the mother wound just affects your self-worth, your ability to soothe yourself, your self-trust, your emotional expression, and how you communicate. So this is also pretty intimately tied to attachment styles. And we could do a whole podcast episode on attachment styles, and maybe one day we will, but for now, I'll just briefly summarize the attachment styles. So there's four attachment styles. The first and most ideal is a secure attachment. And this is you feel connected and trusting and comfortable with independence. You can receive and give support freely. You feel confident in your relationships. Your parents consistently showed up in a loving and supportive way. As a child, you felt safe to explore and come back to home base. Your parent was authoritative, but firm and warm and loving in a way that allowed you to be independent, and you worked together as a team with your parent. The avoidant attachment style is characterized by a struggle to trust or get close to others emotionally. So you may appear really emotionally independent, or people might describe you as like walled off, or you always have a wall up, or maybe cold or emotionally distant. An avoidant attachment style often has a lot of pride in not needing emotional support, and you may tend to pull away or shut down when you're hurt. This attachment style often happens because your parent or parents were absent or negligent, and so you didn't have the experience of physical and emotional acceptance. There was just an absence there, or even an invalidation of your emotions. The third attachment style is the anxious or ambivalent attachment style. This is an insecure attachment style. You need constant reassurance that you're loved. You have a fear of abandonment. You may be clingy. You may take others' behavior really personally, like everything is about you. You may even revert to acting like a child at times. I definitely have noticed in clients who have an anxious or ambivalent attachment style, that they can sometimes even go into like almost baby talk whenever that wound is triggered. You may rely on others to regulate your emotional experience. So you have feelings of abandonment or anger or resentment, especially if people don't live up to your expectations. This comes about because your parent or parents were out of tune with your needs, or they reacted really inconsistently. So for example, if your mom paid attention to you sometimes and ignored you at other times, that can lead to an anxious or ambivalent attachment style. And then finally, the fourth type is the disorganized attachment. So this is like the back and forth. You're seeking security, but you don't trust it. You seek intimacy, and then whenever you get it, you pull away. So the behavior of a disorganized attachment is erratic. Typically, these people have low self-worth. They have a really extreme fear of rejection, a lot of deep-rooted shame. And this comes about because the parent or parents consistently responded inappropriately or failed to respond to a child's distress. So the child is just like, when they cry, that doesn't matter. When they suck up, that doesn't matter. It's like, no matter what the child does, it doesn't seem to work to get the parents' attention. And then, of course, that carries up into life. So how can you heal the mother wound? I mean, first of all, like, you don't just sit down and decide, okay, I'm going to heal the mother wound. Like, it's a process. So I think determining which attachment style you are can help, although it's certainly not necessary. And I personally have difficulty nailing down a particular attachment style for myself because I feel like I vacillate depending on the person I'm in relationship with. So that's just something to be aware of. But it's also really important to be able to acknowledge that your mom's behavior was not your fault. Like, you were a child. You were not too much. You were not unlovable. You were not bad. Like, however your mother behaved towards you to create this wound in you was absolutely 100% not your fault. And even just being able to admit that can be really huge for people. Also being able to admit, like, my mom didn't have adequate mothering herself. How could I expect her to show up and be the mother I needed and deserved when she didn't know how? Like, that was something I personally had to come to in my life. And it was really, really healing because it was like I finally let my mom off the hook. You know, my mom didn't have adequate mothering. My mom mostly raised herself, and then she raised her younger brother. So how could I expect her to give me what she didn't have? You know? So it actually can help to like let your mom off the hook. That doesn't mean that you don't still have healing to do. That doesn't mean that the relationship may not still need to be repaired if it's possible for the relationship to be repaired. But just being able to acknowledge, you know what, my mom probably had a shitty mother herself. And like, she didn't give me what I needed because she didn't have it to give. That can go a long way in healing the mother wound. Another thing that can go a long way in healing the mother wound is grieving the fact that you didn't have the mother you wish you had or you deserved or you needed. What could it look like to grieve? Could it look like putting a photo of yourself at a young age out and channeling that younger version of you and kind of doing some inner child work and going into your inner child and feeling what your inner child was feeling at that time? Maybe the confusion, the abandonment, the rejection, you know, whatever your inner child was feeling, it can really help to acknowledge that and then express the pain of having a mother who couldn't meet your needs or handle your emotions. I think bringing it into the present, if your mother is still alive, is can you allow your mother to be as she was, to be as she is, and still choose a relationship with her? And the answer to this question is going to be as unique as you are. I mean, maybe you do still want to choose a relationship with her, but you need to have some better boundaries. Maybe there's some codependency and enmeshment with your mother still that you need to work through and heal. And that's not something you can work through and heal with your mother. That has to be your own individual work. What boundaries do need to be in place? They could be boundaries that you verbally communicate, but they can also be energetic boundaries that you just set for yourself. For instance, when your mother brings up a particular topic of conversation, you can just not respond, or you could change the subject. Acknowledging your conflicting feelings about your mother. You know, I've had a lot of conflicting feelings about my mom, not so much anymore because we've done a lot to heal our relationship. But in the past, it was like, gosh, I love her so much. I can't imagine not having her in my life. And also, she drives me fucking nuts. You know, so like being able to just acknowledge the conflicting feelings, and you don't have to even do anything with the conflicting feelings. They just are. There's no need to fix them. There's no need to try to make sense of them. Just allowing those conflicting feelings to be there can be really huge. And then maybe it could help to write a letter to your mother, a letter that you don't send. You know, just expressing how you felt as a child, if she blamed you for things, or if she didn't protect you, or if she was complicit in abuse or something like that. You don't want to send this letter. It's just for you, but it can really help to get those feelings of anger, bitterness, resentment, grief, sadness, rejection, just out and on paper. So those are some ways that I like to work with my clients on healing the mother wound in a healthy and grounded manner. And obviously everyone's experience with their mom is different. And so take what resonates and what'll work for you and leave the rest. Okay, next question. This one I should be able to answer pretty quickly. She asked, is there a way to make belly breathing easier? I have to lay down to do it. If you have to lay down to do it, then you lay down to do it. It's okay. I like to lay down to do belly breathing. I find it easier to do belly breathing as well. I actually feel like I get a deeper, fuller breath when I'm laying down versus when I'm sitting up. I prefer to meditate laying down. I don't fall asleep. But I know some people, if they were to fall asleep or if they were to do breath work or meditation laying down, they would fall asleep. You know what? I don't think that's the worst thing ever. Like if you fall asleep meditating, there are worse things, right? So I think, you know, social media and YouTube and even movies, Hollywood has, I think, sort of created the stereotype for like this very thin, tanned, vegan goddess in yoga pants and a sports bra and some sort of like loose and flowy like robe, like silk robe, so that you can see her belly and the robe is like hanging open and her hair is piled up on top of her head with like messy curls. And she's sitting like perfectly crisscrossed with her, you know, middle finger and her thumb together in the like om sign, and like that's what breath work has to look like. You can get that out of your head. Like that is not what breath work has to look like. You can do breath work standing up, sitting down, lying down, do it on all fours. I don't care. The point is that you're doing breath work, not how you're doing the breath work, but that you are actually doing the breath work. So if belly breathing is easier for you laying down, lay down. No problems for me. I will not argue with that. I would much rather you were doing the deep belly breathing than worrying about how you're sitting or lying when you're doing it. So that was an easy one to answer. All right, next question. It's a little bit vague, but she asked, how can I flip it positive when I keep going to the traumas of the past? So I'm guessing what this question means is, when traumas of the past come up, or maybe when I'm triggered from the past, how do I flip it positive? And you don't. It's not a requirement that you flip everything positive. I think that's when we get into like toxic positivity world. You know, there's nothing wrong with being positive. There's nothing wrong in seeing the world through a glass half full lens rather than a glass half empty lens. There's nothing wrong with gratitude, with trying to see the best in people and situations. There's nothing wrong with trying to look on the bright side. But when it comes to trauma, I think before we try to look on the bright side or before we try to even practice gratitude, I think it's really important to just be in awareness that like this is how you're feeling. And you're not failing because you experience people and situations now that remind you of really hard and painful things that you went through in the past, often as a child who may have been helpless and defenseless. Like that definitely does not mean that you're failing or that you're not being positive enough. We are never going to positive think our way out of a nervous system response. We're never going to positive think our way out of a dysregulated nervous system because thinking happens in your mind. And the feeling that you're feeling, either from a trigger or a memory or whatever it is, that's in your body. That's in your nervous system. So you just like we can't mantra our way out of a trauma response, we can't positively think our way out of a trauma response. And people who suggest otherwise are full of shit. So I don't think we actually are required to flip it positive. I mean, those are the words in her question. How can I flip it positive? I don't think that's the answer. I think you can eventually get to a more positive place and how you're feeling about past trauma, but there's no flipping happening at all, right? Like it's not a switch that you just turn on and turn off. It's in your body. It's been in there for a long time. It's embedded in your tissues, in your organs, in your bones. It's in your muscles. Like it's in your DNA even, depending on the level of ancestral trauma you've got going on. Like there's no switch that you flip to turn the positivity on. So wipe that off the table. Like get rid of that idea that you've got to flip it positive whenever you are feeling triggered or feeling the discomfort of a trauma from the past. Like trauma is uncomfortable. It's okay to feel the discomfort of that without jumping into needing to make it positive or needing to spin it. And then you just have to work with the body, right? Like you have to notice the feeling in your body. What am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? How do I describe that feeling? Is there tension? Can I release that tension? If I'm feeling angry, do I need to go do some resistance movements, some push-ups, some squats? Do I need to hit a pillow? If I'm feeling a flight response, can I give my nervous system what it wants and go for a jog or a quick walk? If I'm feeling like I'm in a freeze or a shutdown response, what is one thing I can do? What is one small thing I can do? Can I unload the dishwasher? Can I take the dog for a walk? Can I answer an email? Like those have nothing to do with thinking positively. That's all about working with your nervous system. Your thoughts reflect the state of your nervous system. So the answer to heal your nervous system is not to just try to start thinking happy thoughts, right? Like your thoughts are just a reflection of the state of your nervous system. So get out of your head, get back into your body, start becoming familiar with how your body feels in response to stress or triggers, and then you start moving your way through it. You use the breath, you use dance, you use embodiment, you use breath work, like whatever, right? But no, we don't have to flip it to be positive. You can eventually heal though to the point where you're actually grateful for the things that happened to you because they've helped you become who you are. And like you wouldn't be who you are if you hadn't gone through those things or had relationships with those people, even if it was really harmful. That's how we can get to a more positive place. But we don't just jump from feeling triggered or feeling the trauma straight to flipping a switch and feeling positive. It's a process, right? Don't deny yourself that process. That process is important, it's sacred, and it's beautiful. So that's my answer for that question.
All right. I think we'll make this the last question. 5 seems like a good round number for a Q&A. All right. So this person said, I realize that I've been through trauma and I have been the problem in my friendships and work situations. And I want to heal so that I can be a better person and not always mess up. How do I do this?
Whew. Well, first of all, that's a really, really big thing to even admit, right? Like, shit, I've been the problem here. I think it's important that you actually know that you were the problem and that you weren't like gaslit or manipulated or coerced into believing that you're the problem, because like a lot of people can do that where, you know, they're narcissistic or whatever and they're like constantly flipping things back on you and making it your fault, and then you feel like shit about yourself. So I think if you can say, I realize that I've been through trauma and I've been the problem in friendships and work situations, if you can say that from a grounded, non-self-deprecating, non-shameful, non-guilty, non-coerced place, then that's huge. So that would be that's my first like disclaimer, is like, are you actually the problem? Because, you know, it's very rare that one person is the problem in a relationship. It's usually the dynamic of both people and how they interact with each other that creates the problem in the relationship. But if it really is you, and I'm going to trust that you know that it is, and you're saying that from a grounded place, then I think that's huge. And I think that the awareness of that, I mean, what do we always say, right? Awareness is 90% of the battle. Like, just having the awareness of that can be enough to start to create some shifts. But you're saying, I want to heal so that I can be a better person and not always mess up. How do I do that? I mean, holistic trauma healing, right? Like, that's the path we're all on. It's being in awareness of our patterns, our reactions, our choices, and then asking ourselves honestly, was that choice in support of the reality I want to create? Was that choice, was that decision, was that reaction grounded in the kind of relationship I want, the kind of friendship I want? Or did that come from a place of reactivity because I was triggered, wounded, fearful, whatever it is? This answer is really simple, but everyone listening to this knows that it's not that simple, right? Like, this question is something that we're all working through. We're all working through identifying how our behaviors and reactions and choices have created dysfunction or unhealthy relationships or dynamics, what it's done to our kids, what it's done in our jobs, what it's done with our partners. Like, we're all in that place, right? So, I mean, I think that this question it's a pretty generic question, but the part that stuck out to me was like, I realize that I've been the problem in friendships and work situations. That takes a lot of balls to admit that. So I'm really proud of this person for even being able to admit that. And my answer is simple, like holistic trauma healing. Just start living in awareness. Start the awareness, start reducing your lifestyle inflammation. Like, where are your lifestyle choices out of alignment with the life you want to create? Start practicing nervous system hygiene, learning how to regulate your nervous system. Practice it when you're not in a dysregulated place. Don't just wait until you're in a dysregulated place, but actually practice these tools when you're in a regulated place. And then, of course, you know, any therapy, any books, any resources that you want to seek out to support you in that process, go for it. But your awareness in this process is the most important ingredient in the recipe, not the books, not the therapist, not the coach. It's your own awareness, your own ability to observe yourself and without guilt, without shame, without condemnation, be able to say, well, you know what? When I did that, that was a reaction. I was not consciously making a choice, and that reaction did not support or align with the friendship that I'm trying to create. That choice, that reaction did not support or align the marriage I'm trying to create, or the workplace environment that I want to be in, or whatever it is. Like, awareness and choice, you know, those are your two most powerful allies in your healing process, is your own awareness and your own free will. So generic question, but also important to answer, I think, and I hope I did. That's all I have for you guys today. I guess it's not short. Short and sweet, kind of, but I love doing Q&As. I think that's the projector in me, is I love being asked questions and I love answering them whenever I know what I'm talking about. That's the caveat. I hope everyone listening is having a marvelous December. I am so ready for the solstice to be here and then be gone, because the daylight savings is kicking our asses here at my house. Like today, Friday, December 17th, the sun was set at 4:02 p.m. Like, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. But we're doing okay. Man, we're doing okay. So that's all I have for you. And thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being part of the Trauma Healer Circle. I am honored that you choose to spend your time, your energy, your money in this space. Creating and cultivating this community is so important to me. And I feel like I'm still learning how to do that, how to build online community without a Facebook group. which is tricky, but I'm just so glad all of you are here. And if you have any other questions that I could do a Q&A episode on in the future, please post them to the forum, and I'll talk to you all very soon. Love you so much. Bye-bye.